You know, I showed that clip because a few reasons. One is that I can't see that clip without getting excited and wanting to rent that movie again. So I actually have it. I can't wait to watch it again. I got it at my house. The other reason is it illustrates something that I want to talk about today. When we come down to seeing people fight for physical freedom, when we see someone fight for physical freedom, like in a battle scene like that, we realize the stakes are very high and there's a level of intensity that is deserved, and you're going to be open to doing things you had never done before, like paint your face blue, put on a kilt, and, you know, rattle your saber. You realize when you want to be about physical freedom, it takes radical, radical measures, and we all understand that. Well, we're talking in this series about freedom, and specifically spiritual freedom. None of us are probably in physical bondage here today, but yet spiritual bondage, doing things we don't want to do, not doing things we don't want to do, having grids through which we interpret the world that we wish we didn't, and a whole host of things I talked about last week I'm going to talk a little about today. And I want to tell you in the front end, I'm going to freak you out today. I'm going to ask you to do things. I'm going to ask you to consider things you might have never considered before. I'm going to say things that had somebody said this other than me, you might think they're crazy. You still might think I'm crazy. Yeah, when I say what I'm going to say. But I'm going to push the envelope a little bit today because I believe firmly in the principle of spiritual freedom, and it's going to require something different than many of you have been willing to try. So let's pray before we go any further. God, I am asking that you would open our minds and our hearts to receive information that we may have not heard before or been willing to accept before. And I ask that my words would be clear and they would be words that you approve of. And it's not because I want to give a good speech per se, but I want people to be set free. That's what I want. That's what I believe we want sitting here. We want to feel uninhibited and having lives that operate the way you've always designed them to operate. And so do in here what only you can do. And it's in your name I pray. Amen. Last week we drew some parallels between the physical world and the spiritual world. And we talked about in the physical world, when somebody wants freedom, there must be an external emancipator that comes. An external emancipator that comes from the outside in to emancipate. The north has to come to the south to emancipate. And in the spiritual realm, this is the way it works too. There must be an external emancipator in the spiritual realm that does what only the emancipator can do. Now, the emancipator is Jesus. Jesus comes into our world and he tries to set us free. He does the work to set us free through things like teaching, and specifically through things like putting his arms wide in a cross and dying a death that everyone deserves who's done things that we shouldn't have done. And this is the spiritual freedom he offers, but we have to come to a place where we receive that freedom before we start to enjoy the benefits of it. Abraham Lincoln, when he was talking once about the need to be united as a country, he talked about how the North and the South need to be together. And he said, a house divided cannot stand. And people didn't realize, many people don't realize today that what Abraham Lincoln was doing was quoting Jesus. Let's take a look at what Jesus said and the context in which he says it. What he is talking about here is he is talking about defending himself against accusations that people had against him. See, when Jesus came and walked the earth, he did things that were pretty wild. It's why we date time by him. It's why people all around the globe are thinking about him in some way, shape, or form today. He did things like heal people of infirmities, set them free from physical restrictions they had because their body wasn't operating properly. He freed them because he gave them right understandings of God that were against the religion of that day. He gave them great teaching, and nobody would debate that. But another thing he did that was repeated over and over and over again in the Bible and in people's eyewitness testimonies was he went up to people who had demonic afflictions. And he actually released people from demonic afflictions. Now, in our culture today, if you talk about something that's in a spiritual realm that is demonic, you think you're crazy, because we don't tend to see that with our own eyes in this culture. But you go to other cultures in the world, it is a very normal thing. And I'm talking about cultures where maybe even Christianity isn't there. I'm talking about culture where there is voodoo and different religions. It's a very accepted thing. Today in our culture, it's really not. And I think one of the reasons it's accepted is, or it's not accepted today, is, the evil realm was pretty intelligent. And I think in our enlightened culture, they realized that if they would start doing some of the freaky stuff that happens in other parts of the globe, it would be so obvious to us that we'd actually change our lives. But this is the context in which Jesus operated, and he was never accused of not healing people. He was never accused of not sending out demonic forces. He was never accused of teaching really even the wrong thing so much. But what they accused him of was, okay, what you're doing is you're actually being influenced by an evil power. That's where you get your power, Jesus, is an evil power that's enabling you to do these things. So here's what Jesus says. He says in the book of Mark chapter 3, how can Satan drive out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. If a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan opposes himself and is divided, he cannot stand. His end has come. In fact, no one can enter a strong man's house and carry off his possessions unless he first ties up the strong man. Then he can rob his house. Jesus says, hold on here, folks. You're really getting confused. If you think that I am empowered by evil forces and that's how all these miracles are happening, well, then why would I undo evil things? If I was empowered by evil, why would I come against evil? Why would it? Because a house divided can't stand. If there is a Satan and Satan is empowering me, why would he be empowering me to undo things that evil is doing? A house divided cannot stand. And he says, well, you know that there's a strong man that possesses things, a strong man, and there has to be an external influence that comes in and throws out the strong man. Jesus is saying, everybody is possessed, has an overriding objective, has somebody, something that's controlling their life. Some people it's God, some people it's Satan. And it's not that obvious, but it's a strong man. It's somebody who wants you to be in bondage. It's somebody who wants you to second guess yourself. It's somebody who wants you to not think that God has your best interest at heart. It's someone who wants you to believe that God is a bad Santa who's just making lists and checking it twice and wants you to fail. It's somebody who wants you to believe that you'll never get life right and you're a loser. It's someone who wants you to believe that the mistakes that you made define you today and you'll never get over them. It's someone who wants you to believe that this life really can't be better. This is just all there is. It's somebody who wants to restrict you, to keep you from being all that God would enable you to be. Now, when we understand this, then there's another passage in the scriptures that makes a little more sense. I'm going to spend the rest of my time talking about this today. It's in the book of Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, and here's what it says. For though we live in a world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. This passage says there's a war going on right now. And it's not a physical war, it's a spiritual war. So it doesn't play by the same rules that a physical war does. It's weapons of a spiritual nature. And so what we want to do is bring down strongholds that are held by the strong man. A stronghold. What is a stronghold? Let me say something. If you don't know what a stronghold is, which 99% of us probably don't, you probably have one. That's about the third thing I said that should freak you out today. Okay, if you, so what is a stronghold? You probably have one. A stronghold, in ancient times, a stronghold was a fortress. That's where a stronghold was. It was a fortress. Or a stronghold was also translated as a prison. And so in this context, what a stronghold is, it is something that you erect to protect yourself or protect a position or protect something that as you erect this structure, it actually binds you and puts you in prison. That's what a stronghold is. A stronghold is any core belief or core feeling that keeps you from being who God wants you to be. Any core belief or feeling that keeps you from being who God wants you to be, it's a stronghold. And you put it up thinking that you're giving yourself protection and safety, but really you're giving yourself restriction. Let me give you an example, one that we hopefully would all agree with. I oftentimes have gotten criticized for criticizing parents who make their kids wear helmets when they're on tricycles. I'm sorry, I just think that that's wussy. Okay, now you could give me grief over that, and that's okay, you can give me grief, that's fine. I just think that that's indicative of just the fear that we have in our society. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but hopefully we could all agree on this one. I heard this past week that Massachusetts is passing a law that any kid at recess in Massachusetts can't play tag. Did you hear this? Now we're talking, huh? Now everyone agrees with me, right? Apparently someone has thought that kids having unstructured playtime playing tag is just too dangerous. One person has quoted who's been involved with this saying, "I've seen far too many near collisions on the playground to accept tag anymore." Honestly, that's an exact quote. So well, where does it start? Well, it starts with this core belief that we have to protect children and everything has to be safe. And so what happens is we erect all these things to make everything safe. And then what do you know? We've erected a prison to where we don't allow children to run free. We have a prison where people have this fear of something bad could happen to you any moment. On your tricycle, something bad could happen to you. Out when you're playing unstructured tag, something bad could happen to you. I got an idea. Why don't we create PlayStation Tag? PlayStation Tag. Well, that way, no one has to touch each other. They can just press buttons. And what do you know? We're making maybe people a little safer, but they're actually putting them in bondage restriction because they're being more afraid of the world. And also, maybe their muscles are decaying and not being able to live their lives active. You know, this is an example of something, a core belief that we have, that we create a fortress around and we imprison ourselves. So you could have something that is something you hold dearly, a core value that you believe that is actually holding you back and putting you in bondage. A stronghold is software. It's the operating system software that operates in the back of our mind through which we filter all the data that comes our way. We're not even aware it's there. The greatest strongholds are ones we don't even know about. If you know about it, then you probably don't have one. If you don't know about it, you probably have one. It's the operating software. It's the interpretation process by which we interpret all the data that comes. So we're in a meeting and somebody says something to us. We're out in the atrium and someone doesn't say something to us. And we immediately interpret, oh, that person doesn't like me. Or we immediately interpret, that person wants my job. Or we immediately interpret, that person wants the person I'm dating. It could be some innocuous data, but because we have this core belief or conviction, we interpret this data in a way that restricts us, in a way that makes us paranoid, in a way that keeps us from being free, in a way that makes our mind work overtime, trying to be concerned about what if and what if, what if. The stronghold is, it's the moose on the table that other people see that you might not see. If you run with a group of friends, check this out. Tell me this isn't true. You ever run with a group of friends and you're always hanging out and spending time with each other? And let's say there's six of you and all five of you really know the issue with this other person. You know what I'm talking about? It's the moose on the table that you all know, but you don't ever want to bring up. But who doesn't know about it? That person. They're the one who doesn't know about it. Because you know, if you bring it up, it's going to be conflict. They're going to deny it. But everybody knows this is the way it is, but they don't know that. It's the moose on the table. You don't want to talk about it. It's just too sensitive. Well, maybe when the other five people are around, maybe they know what your thing is, but they don't bring that up. You ever think of that? Stronghold. It's the reason why some of us don't trust any authority figure. We have this core belief that people in authority are twisted. It's the reason why we don't trust any politician. Which maybe that's a good idea. It's a reason why we don't trust any police officer and we think they all just eat jelly donuts on taxpayer dollars. It's the reason why we always think our manager is out to get us. It's the reason why anybody in authority we doubt and we think there's some, it's the reason why we think pastors and priests are all crazy people that are just whacked. It's a stronghold. It's a belief that keeps us restricted. It's the reason why we fear the stupid things that we fear. It's the reason strongholds are the reason why we go into meetings or we're in the atrium or someplace else and we're constantly trying to get people to validate us. We're saying things so that they compliment us or we're just subtly dropping hints to let people know that I have things that you don't have. It's the reason why we're never satisfied with what we have materially. We buy a new car and then a new model comes out that we don't have or somebody else gets the same model and they get it cheaper or we have an iPod and then the next week one comes out that has more gig and is smaller and so all of a sudden we don't like our iPod and it's maybe a stronghold about materialism. That's a stronghold. It's a reason why these things take place. It's stuff that's strange. And we think it's just us. We think it's just normal. We think that this is just the way life is. And I'm just a normal human being. But this transcends those normal problem areas where this is the defining thing that we've protected and walled off and upheld as the ultimate thing through which to filter the world through and through which to live life with. And unbeknownst to us, we've actually put ourselves in a prison because it's restricting us. It's telling us we can't do certain things. It's telling us to, that made you jump, didn't it? Yeah. And telling us we're not to go. So here's some marks. Some marks of these strongholds. One mark is that you have repeated unwanted behavior. There's certain things that you do that you don't want to do, or certain things that you don't do that you wish you did do. This repeated on, it's what I referred to last week when I was with, one of my, a stronghold that I constantly have to tear down and deal with is competition. Trying to compete and trying to, it's a constant deal for me. And so it's the reason why, as I confessed last week, why I kept trying to drop subtle hints to John Pepper that I'm a good leader. Cause I wanted like to compete and let him see like I can play on your same level. And I don't know if it's because I was adopted and I had people I was competing with in my family, or I don't know if it's because I was always in sports and we were competing or what, but you know, I'm around other pastors. I internally try to compete and think who's doing better. Or if I'm around people who have a nicer car than me, I still compete and I win that competition because I think, well, I don't have as good of a car as you because I give more money than you. So that's, so therefore I win that competition. And you know, it's this subtle software that goes on and I don't like it. I don't like it. It restricts me. It makes me think that it's unwanted. That's an example for me. Another mark of a stronghold is memory gaps. Memory gaps. If you can't go back to kindergarten, first grade, second grade, every year of your life, and if you don't have 10 crisp memories that you can call out, there's probably a stronghold that was established then. There's probably something that took place that you're trying to not think about because it's painful or you don't want to revisit and that thing is defining who you are and you just think you have a bad memory. No. No. There's something else that's fortifying itself. There's something else that's walling you in if you've got these big memory gaps and you don't even know it. Here's another mark. Another mark is confusion as to why. You see yourself do these things and you go, why? Why do I do that? I did it. Why do I do that? Why do I always say that? Why do I always defend myself like that? Why? And when after the fact, you recognize, I did it again. Why is this? And you're confused. You don't like it. You're confused. Another mark is knowledge about yourself that no one else knows. One of my favorite exercises to do, I've done it a few times with smaller groups of people, whether it's guys I've been riding bikes with or a small group I'm part of is say, tell us all something that we don't know about you. It's a great question. Tell us all something we don't know about you. And in these various groups that I've done, I've noticed that there's normally always a person or two that you just can't get them to talk no matter what. They just won't talk. And my interpretation of why they won't talk is they know the perfect answer to that question. They know the perfect answer to what they could say that we don't know, but they are never going to say that. And so therefore their mind melts down. They can't think of anything else to say. They know. Why is that? Because things that are hidden, that are planted in us, that we wall off, become dark places, and mold loves to grow in the dark. And mold goes through our heart, and it binds us. Another mark of a stronghold is bitterness towards a person or a type of person. Don't like men. Don't like women. If your boss was a man or a woman, one or the other, you'd give them the nod more than the other. Don't like white people. Don't like black people. Don't like cops. Don't like Republicans. Don't like Democrats. Don't like Koreans. Don't like, you know, whatever, PNG people. Don't like whatever. There's just this bitterness towards somebody because they're aligned with something. And it's just habitual. You don't know anything about that person. You just notice that they're aligned with something and automatically you don't give them the benefit of the doubt. There's a bitterness. Another mark is blind acceptance of limitations. Say, well, that's just the way I am. I'm just not the kind of person to, and you start digging and say, no, who told you that? Where did you learn that? I don't know. I just have always been like that. That's just who I am. That's just who I am. I have the ability to see things that are wrong with people and just speak to them. That's just the way I am. Well, no one likes that way you are. No one does. You don't, that's not a God-given ability. He did not give you that gift. He wants you to bury and burn that gift. That's just not some, but there's this blind thing. That's just kind of who I am. I think I have one more mark is, these things are established in a moment. There is a defining moment where these things are established and they're strengthened over time. Let me give you a kind of a fun example of how a stronghold works. It's a fun example. It's not fun. It's embarrassing to me, but it's a simple way to talk about this. I've given this story before, but let me give it a different context for it. When I was a little kid, I was staying over at my grandma and grandpa's house. And I remember this morning, I was eating breakfast, and my grandma's making me breakfast, and my grandfather comes down with his briefcase, and he says, okay, I'm getting ready to go to work. I gotta go. And I said, Grandpa, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to Hawaii. I said, are you? You're going to Hawaii? He said, yep, I'm going to drive to Hawaii today. I said, oh, really? And my grandmother said, yep, that's right. Grandpa's going to drive to Hawaii. They probably behind my back were laughing about the whole thing. You know, yeah, this is so cute to get to tease my grandson. Maybe that's where I get all my teasing from. Ooh, wow, never thought of that way. But anyway, I thought it was a simple enough thing, and they leave. And at that moment, established in a moment in time, was I can drive to Hawaii. Hawaii is a place you can drive to, which is no big deal to have that as a belief. No big deal. Until about third grade comes along, and we're in geography class. And Miss Noka says, talks about Hawaii, and they're talking about Hawaii, and said, oh, I know Hawaii. I know about Hawaii. Yes. Well, you know, I said, well, my grandfather's been there. So, oh, has he? Good. Yes. And he drove there. He drove to Hawaii. And she said, Brian, your grandfather didn't drive to Hawaii. I said, well, yes, he did. And he said, no, you can't drive to Hawaii. And I'm just like, you call my grandfather a liar? This is not a good symbol. Yes, he did. He didn't drive to Hawaii. He shows me this map where there's blue all around it. Well, that must be a different Hawaii, or the road must have flooded or something like that. I'm thinking these things by myself. So I go home. It was one of the most traumatic days of my life. I go home like, they said grandpa didn't go to Hawaii. And then my mom said, yeah, you can't drive to Hawaii. I'm like, what? to this day, when I think of Hawaii, I think you can drive there. I do, honestly. I think when you say Hawaii, like my split second reaction is I think of Hawaii like San Diego. It's far away, but you can get there. So that's an example. That's a fun, stupid example, but there's other things that have been planted inside of you by people that aren't that fun and innocent. There are things that are planted in a moment of time that were maybe painful, or they were hurtful, or they were simply wrong, and it continues to define you to today, and it continues to filter all the information that comes to you. And the fact is, you're not protecting yourself or getting ahead. You are in bondage. You are in a stronghold. You are in a place where people are binding you. Someone said to you, you'll never amount to anything. And 40 years later, you still can't work less than 60 hours a week because you're trying to prove somebody you are amounting to somebody. That's a stronghold. Somebody says to you, man, you are just like your mother. And immediately you say, no, I am not. In fact, you have strategically, though you've never realized it, you have strategically chosen the exact values, the exact parenting techniques, the exact opposite parenting techniques, the exact opposite political persuasion, just because your whole life is you don't want to be like your mom. And that's a stronghold. It's a stronghold. You're not free from that. Some of us have been told innocent things like, you can be whatever you want to be. No, you can't. You cannot be. You can be who God has designed you to be, but yet you've had this naive self-esteem where you just keep trying new things and taking big risks, and you have bankruptcies, and you have all kinds of frustrations because you cannot be whoever you want to be. I cannot be a professional basketball player, even though my teeth get cut in the rim when I go up for a layup because I can jump that high. I cannot be a professional basketball player. You can't be whoever you want. And this thing, you think it's a free, it's not. It's putting you in bondage. It's a stronghold. These things, they go on and on and on, these strongholds. Here's how these things work together. It's very insidious how it works. There's two ways that these work together. For some of us, it's all one way or all the other way. For most of us, it's a combination of both. First, the way that we all can relate to, and every scientist would say, Brian, you're telling the exact truth. Then the harder way. The first way is just the way our brain works. The way our brain works, it works in such a way as to be very creative and very restrictive. Once your brain believes something, once you have a core value or conviction, once you see something in your brain, the way the neural networks work and the way the synaptic connections fire off, you just see it. It is reality to you, and very few people are able to change the thought patterns in their mind in a physical sense. Our brains are incredible things that God has created. They are. Our imagination is a phenomenal thing that God's created. That is a stronghold. You know, don't be such an over-imaginative person. You're like a little silly child. That's a stronghold. I mean, over-imaginative person. God created your imagination. He created your mind. He created your ability. What happens is it can get bastardized. We've all had dreams, hopefully, and we wake up in the morning, and for maybe 2 or 3 hours afterwards, we're still not sure, was that real or not? Because your brain is the greatest surround sound theater with live matrix interaction that's ever been created. There will never be technology like your brain that can see things in vivid color, have surround sound, and you can't really distinguish between what you're seeing in your brain and what you're seeing out there. It's one and the same. That's why we have dreams, and we still are not sure if it's true or not. It's why when you tell a lie, if you tell it often enough, you will convince your brain that you're seeing a situation the way it wasn't. It's why people can take polygraph tests and they can pass them, because they've told themselves a lie and they've lived under some perception for long enough that their brain, their neural chemistry actually recreates the scene in their mind and they see it differently. It's why people have their leg cut off. And their brain is still telling them they have a leg and they still feel pain in their foot even though their foot isn't there. It's because they have these mental patterns that are locked in. And so strongholds, once we believe something and once we go after it, our brain is constantly trying to reinforce that, and we have to take every thought captive. Now, the way this is really, really just whacked is you combine the fact that there is a spiritual realm. There is a spiritual, there are personalities that are enjoying your thought life working improperly. There are persons, there are spiritual personalities that are applauding and strengthening you having a false view of reality. There is a demonic world that is excited about you not getting over the abuse that you've had, is excited about you reliving that abuse over and over, that is excited that you haven't even remembered it, but it's yet defining you. You take it into thinking that there's a demonic world that is excited that you really think and fired up that you just mindlessly go after more and more. If I buy more and more stuff and work harder and harder and get more and more money, I'll be happy. And excited that you live that way. Excited. Excited that you have 3 homes. Excited that you've got all kinds. Excited that you think that reality is the more stuff I have, the happier I'll be. They're excited about that. That's not just the way advertising works. It's the way the demonic realm is excited that you're going after that stuff instead of after the freedom of God. And you're enslaved to those stuff. You're enslaved to insurance for it. You're enslaved for the maintenance of it. You're enslaved for never being happy you have it. When you consider there are personalities and entities that want you to remember that somebody said to you, man, you're big nosed two potatoes. Look how big your nose is. You've never gotten over that. And that's why every plastic surgery you have, it's never enough, because you can't help but think that you're not good looking enough. And there's a realm that's applauding that. And this wants you to keep thinking you don't measure up, even though the rest of us look at you and you look great. You look great. But you have a stronghold in your mind that says no, 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 not at all. Now, as I talked last week, there is this emancipator Jesus who comes in to free us. And what I've said today, if you never want to believe in Jesus or receive Jesus, you can improve your life by what I've said today. You can take what I understood about the mind and all that stuff, and you can pull yourself up by the bootstraps, and you can get a little better if you just work on some stuff. But you won't get free, totally free, unless you receive the emancipator. This is what Jesus does. He's not come to define your morality. He's not come to define whether or not you get to heaven or not, although those things are important, and you know, he has something to say about that. He's come to set you free. That's the whole point of Jesus. He comes to set, he's come to set you free, and they're right here now, the things that restrict you. It is for freedom that Jesus set us free, what I quoted last week in Galatians 5:1. And these guys back here, they're sort of examples of people who have received freedom. There are people who have received Jesus. And what happens to many of us is we receive Jesus. We say, okay, yeah, I believe Jesus died for my sins. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, good. And then what we do is we'll go through our life still living the exact same way we lived before, thinking that the way I get out of my chains, the way I get out of my addictive patterns, the way I get out of my limitations, I just try harder, I work harder. And the emancipator is, the scripture speaks that, no, Jesus has really freed you. His life coming in, he is the emancipator, he has freed you, and you don't have to keep clanking, you don't have, you really are free. You're free. You're free from the way God views you is free. Go ahead. Yeah, he frees you. Okay. He says, no, you might think you're in chains. You might think that you're less than. You might think that you're not worthy. But no, Jesus comes and says, no, I say you are worthy because, or I say you're worthy because I decided to die for you. No, you are worthy. I freed you. You just have to really believe that no, in God's eyes, you are, you can go. You don't have to keep banging at yourself. Go ahead. You are free. This is the unbelievable thing that Jesus does, is he gives freedom. Now, when we understand this, 2 Corinthians 10, 3-5 starts to look a little different. Let's look at it again. It says this, for though we live in the world, we don't wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds, to demolish the things that have us captive and are hemming us in. We demolish arguments, the things that are spoken to us that aren't true, that keep us in bondage, and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. See, we get these constant thoughts. They're natural thoughts that come to bind us and to restrict us. Let me give you an example of that. I'm going to do a prayer exercise in a little bit that I think is going to be pretty cool. I'm hoping and praying is going to be pretty cool. Let me tell you what we're going to do in this prayer exercise. We're going to leverage the power of our brains in praying, the power of our imagination in praying. God has created your brain. He's created your imagination, and I think it's the most underutilized thing in communicating to God. The reason why many of us don't talk to God and we have frustrating prayer lives is because you don't like preparing and making speeches. If you think prayer as preparing and making speeches, you'll never pray with God. Who likes to prepare and make a speech? Very few of us. Some of us think of talking with God is like writing a term paper, getting all the words right, and saying the right things. Well, if that's what it, who wants to talk with God? I hate term papers. If I think God is grading my words and grading all that stuff, that's what I'm, and words aren't all that effective. What we know is a picture's worth 1,000 words. Maybe God has created our brains because they're to be the primary communication tools with him. He's created our imagination because it's to speak with him and interact with him. And I'm going to walk you through an exercise in a moment that it's going to enable you to tap into your imagination to where God might form it and use it to connect with him and experience your freedom. And when you do that, you can take every thought captive to Christ. Let me tell you something happened. It happened twice now. It happened last night, and then it happened after this last service. A couple stories I heard. I had a woman come to me last night. She said, you know, I'm really mad at you. I said, well, join the club. Yeah, everyone's mad. No, I didn't say that. I'm like, that's the last thing I want to hear. I immediately go, yeah, well, what, why are you mad at me? And she said, well, every time you refer to adoption, it's in a negative. And I gave up a child for adoption decades ago. And I'm just mad that you talk about it that way. And I went, oh, man. I said, I have to think about that because I certainly do not intend to bring up adoption negative at all. I'm so glad that I was adopted. I have to think about that. But let me, and I'm sorry if I have, I said to her, but let me ask you something, Mom. I think that every person who's ever given a child up for adoption has done the right thing. I don't know a single person who's ever given a child for adoption who hasn't done the right thing. And all of a sudden her eyes start to get a little moist. And I said to her, you know what I think? I think this is a stronghold of yours. I think that when you hear me talk about adoption or anybody, the thought that comes to your mind is that you're feeling guilty and you're feeling angry and you have to take this thought captive. Explosion in tears. Think you're right. Just explosion in tears. Along the same line, I told that story last service. Someone came up to me and said, man, we did this prayer exercise. I always thought that I was a bad person for giving my child up for adoption. And where I had my child, the nuns told me I could never see my child because I wouldn't be able to detach with it. And for years and years and years and years, for decades, I felt guilty and awful that my daughter, and she's crying as she's telling me this, because I felt my daughter didn't know that I loved her. And when we prayed, I saw an image of Jesus holding my baby in another room in the hospital, telling my baby, your mom loves you. That's why she's giving you up. Your mom loves you. And she just... taking this thought captive. See, when you get a thought, it might not be a thought that God approves of. And so you have to say, okay, this thought, is this the right thought? I thought about having interviews today. I don't have time to give the interviews, but I'll tell you what I would have. I would have brought up a woman who can remember when her parents bought her Levi jeans. And her two older brothers told her she looked awful in the Levi jeans. And just... as older brothers do, just made fun of her incessantly. And I could tell you how that person has strongholds around her self-image and things that still affects our marriage today. I could bring her up and we could talk about our marriage today. I could do that and talk about that. I won't do that. I could interview another friend who just thought it was normal behavior. And she's on the treadmill. She's on the treadmill and she's doing her work. Every time she would look at somebody beside her who was on the same treadmill and she would try to find their pace. Every single time. And then as she noticed the pace, she would push it up like 1/10 higher. Click and go higher. Every time. And someone's like, oh, what's wrong with that? That's kind of funny. That's kind of good. And she, after years of doing this and realized it's not just the treadmill, it's every environment she was in, she was trying to perform better than the person try to perform. She realized, I have a stronghold of performance and I think that my performance makes me worthy. It was a stronghold of something she couldn't stop, but something that defined her. And I would bring her up and I have her talk about how she broke that stronghold. And it wasn't just a weird, quirky thing. There was a demonic element that was trying to have her enslaved to performance as opposed to being in a relationship with the freedom of Jesus. If I could, I would bring up the person who just talked with me after one of our services and said, I've had this thing that no one has ever known, including my husband, 67 years old. And when I was a little girl, I was abused and I've always thought that I wasn't worthy since I was abused. And all of a sudden, and as you go, I'd interview that. It would be things that are intense things that aren't so intense things yet. If it's a thought that is not a thought that God approves of, we make, like here's one. My husband or wife did this once with some person, and therefore I can never trust that person again. And you think you're giving yourself freedom because you're protecting yourself? No, you're not. You're giving yourself bondage because you're always wondering what they're doing and always asking for it. You're in bondage. You're not in freedom. You're in bondage. It's a stronghold. If I could, I'd bring up my friend Greg Boyd. And actually, I can't bring him up. Let's take a look at him on the video here.
My mom died of leukemia when I was two. I was told that I never accepted that. I kept on asking, when's mom coming home? And they would say, the angels took her. And I was so mad at angels. And well, you tell those angels to give her back. I remember this, but they told me that's as a kid, I just would not accept that my mom wasn't there. And my stepmother also had a thing where, especially when she would get angry, she got very abusive, rather sick. Her forms of punishment were just not very healthy. One time as a hyperactive kid, it's hard to believe I was hyperactive, but I was. And I painted the side of my house with crayons. I just had crayons, and it was a stucco wall, and I thought it was so cool, though, the kind of, designs that came when you just put crayon all over the place. And I just colored the house with crayon. My stepmother caught me and then made me lick the crayon off the wall. And I don't know how long this episode went on. I was about 5 or 6 because I was living in Lansing, Michigan at the time. And we moved from there when I was 6, so it had to be before then. But and then she would have a belt, and if I stopped licking the crayon, she would start whipping me. And the thing about stucco is that it's chalky, and so your saliva dries up very quickly. And so my tongue was like sandpaper, and it was like bleeding. And she wouldn't let me stop. And there's just a twistedness there. We just never had any kind of love. I never remember sitting up on her lap and ever hearing for her say I love you or anything like that. It was just animosity. There's one time in prayer where the Lord, I'm just talking with the Lord, and whenever I talk with the Lord, I can see him, and I'm talking with him, and I just kind of picture him there. And he says, and all of a sudden, I'm back at that scene. I'm a little kid, and I'm looking crying off the wall, and I'm crying, and I'm getting hit. And in this scene, I look over, and Jesus is right next to me. And his mouth is full of chalk, and and his tongue is bleeding too, and he's crying. And he's there looking crying off the wall as well. And that's just bizarre. But see, it was the Lord's way of saying, when you were hurting, I was hurting for you. Something precious was dying and I was crying. You weren't alone back then. I was there with you.
Let me do a prayer exercise right now. If you want to do this, I'm going to pray something powerful happens for you. If you don't want to do this, you can either fake like you are or just look around. Honestly, you know, I don't expect you to believe everything I said today or anything I said just because I said it. But for some of us, we've been made aware of a stronghold, a defining system that's had us enslaved, and we want to get free of that. And this is one step in that process. So God, I'm asking that you would bring your spirit in this place as it has been, and you would just blow through this place. Blow through, touch fake, touch people right now. Let them know that you know and you care. Okay, now I want you to go to a place. Your mind right now, your brain is, you can go back to a place and relive it or live it as clearly as if you were actually living it. There's a place I want you to go. And it's probably the place that you've been thinking of this service. Maybe it's a place you hadn't even thought of before, that there was an event, an incident, where a seed of deception was planted that's grown into bars. I want you to go to that place. All right, now fine-tune your awareness there. Fine-tune. Don't look at it in black and white. If it was negative, you're probably seeing it in black and white. It's the way the brain went down to it. Make it vivid. Make it color. Tune it. Be aware of the sounds that are happening in that place, the details, temperature. God, would you direct our minds right now? We want to take these thoughts captive. Would you direct us? Just notice what happens. Into that scene walks Jesus. However you see him, he walks in. He was there, he is there, he is here. He walks in and he looks at you. God, show him. Show him what you say, what you do right now. Take their thoughts captive with your love. Speak to him. Talk. Father, I pray freedom for all of your children. I pray freedom right now. God, many of us are weak and weary, and it's because there have been strongholds the strong man has been encouraging. And I want to take thoughts captive right now. Some of us feel like we're just not worthy. We're not. We're not worthy. Yet I know in 1 Peter, it says that all those who are in you are holy. We are worthy. That is the truth. Some of us feel like we're just mere survivors. The best we can do is survive. And that's not good enough. The truth is, Romans 8:37 says that those who are in you are more than conquerors. We're conquerors. We're not just survivors, we're conquerors. We overcome. We break through strongholds. That's the truth. Some of us are in strongholds. We feel like we're never going to live down the wrongs that we've done. And someday, you're going to whip us. Someday, we're going to get ours. For all who have a relationship with the Emancipator, the truth is, as Romans 8:1 says, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. None. Some of us just have this belief that you don't care about us. We're nothing. We're just an amalgamation of proteins that you really don't care about. It's all just chance. Yet the truth is, in Zephaniah 3:14, it says you actually sing songs over us and you dance. And that's how much you know every one of us are excited. This is the truth, God. The truth. We're break out of our afflictions, break out of our limitations, break out of the strongholds that the strong man rejoices that we've settled for. We want freedom. We want freedom. Hey God, I just had this unique thought as we sang that this service, that I believe one of the strongholds that some people have in here is believe that if we actually followed you, you would lead us to bondage. You would lead us to a less than life. You would lead us to restriction. You would lead us to something that would just be bad. That is just of the strong man. That's not something that you approve of at all. I take that thought captive. I want us to notice that you want to lead us to freedom. That's what you're about. It is for freedom that you set us free. And I thank you that some of us have claimed it today and we've experienced it. We have a taste for the first time. Others of us, we're on the road. We're on the road. You know, one thing I just thought, you know, when we leave here, sometimes you have to declare freedom to somebody, and there might be a conversation that you have to have with somebody that isn't as much about them hearing what you have to say as it is you saying what you've never said before. Seal that moment and say it, okay? Hey, a couple of big things this week. Baptism service on Wednesday night for some people who have claimed freedom, have gone through a process, can be baptized by 60 people. It's going to be awesome. Don't want to miss that. Prayer thing on Friday night, right? Friday. And next weekend as always. So we'll see you later. Go Bengals. Get out of the parking lot fastly and quickly. See ya. And safely.